All right, guys, it was reported a couple of days ago about some potential rule changes to reduce the pace of play for college football. What do you think about those? I'm going to tell you my strong opinions on them. That, a whole lot more here on your Wednesday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols, and I'm your host, Eric Kane. So glad that you guys elected to spend some time with me here this morning on your way to work, in your workout, in your cubicle, whatever the case may be. Thank you for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day and for watching, subscribing, and sharing this YouTube video. You can find it at Locked On Vols on the YouTube channel. This episode is brought to you in part by FanDuel Sportsbook. The official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more by visiting FanDuel.com/LockedOn today, and that's where you can go ahead and get started. We got a fun show coming up today. We spoke on it a little bit during the mailbag. Somebody asked me about what I thought about the potential rule changes. We'll go into deep into that report. It was from Ross Dellinger of SI on trying to shorten football games essentially at the FBS level. I'll give you my two cents on those and exactly what is being reported. That's in segment one. In segment two, Josh Ward. And then in segment three coming up, Tennessee baseball. Again, I'm going to sprinkle some baseball in there because baseball season is here. Where Tennessee baseball fell in the polls. If you follow the sport of baseball, and again, I'm new to covering it in terms of college baseball, on the beat every single day, so I, like a lot of you most likely, didn't know at the time until last year that there are, you know, pretty much six national polls that baseball follows. Where did Tennessee fall in all of those national polls following the 1-2 weekend? And was Tennessee overranked to begin the season? And we'll have that and more coming up here on today's show. There was a baseball game yesterday, a midweek game against Alabama A&M, and because of that, I wanted to go ahead and get this episode recorded and out of the way. So recapping Texas A&M, that will come up maybe on tomorrow's show. So I wanted to get that out there. All right, so the report coming from Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger a couple days ago on college football. Will it shorten games or attempt to shorten some games with potential rule changes in 2023? The average game time, just getting this out there right now, the average game time at the FBS level right now in 2022 was 3 hours and 22 minutes. If you want to try to correlate this closer to the NFL, which is what some of these clock changes are going to be proposed to do, the NFL game time on average in 2022 was 3 hours and 10 minutes. So the college game is going about 12 minutes longer. And sure, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but again, that is 12 minutes longer than the NFL game. Executives of the sport are exploring several clock changes to reduce play for safety and game length reasons. Again, that is from the report from Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger. First and foremost, let's get this off the top right here. Let's quit pretending that we care about the health and safety of players. All right? Let's quit pretending that. All right? It's hilarious to me. They've hid behind that excuse when they want to change something about any sports, in college football, the NFL, Major League Baseball, basketball, whatever the case is, they want to hide behind player safety, okay? And it cracks me up, too, during the whole COVID season, the fiasco in 2020, and of course that lingered on in 2021, that due to health and safety protocols, the coronavirus was real, and of course trying to maintain it while playing a sport and everything, but it's just funny, they always have to say health and safety protocols, like, again, I'm not trying to say that in terms of the COVID season or anything, but anytime they want to change something, they use it as a cop-out. Health and safety protocols. Please, get real. If you were truly concerned about the health and the safety of your players, I'll give you an example from the NFL. You wouldn't have put a 17th game in the NFL schedule in the regular season. If you truly cared about the health and safety of your players, then why add another football game in the regular season when it's already too long? Why? Because you can make money, and money makes the world go round. We know that, right? So right off the top, executives of the sport exploring several clock rule changes to reduce play for safety and game length. Get freaking real. It's not about safety. All right, tangent number one in the books. Here are the four proposed rule changes according to the report from Sports Illustrated. Two of which are pretty non-controversial, one of which is considered to be gaining wide support in the college football community, and the other one is considered to be controversial. The first two, non-controversial. One, prohibiting consecutive timeouts, essentially icing the kickers. To me, I could, you know, who cares? That's non-controversial for me. So number one, proposing the prohibiting consecutive timeouts. Number two, no longer extending first or third quarters for untimed downs, meaning if there's a defensive penalty, there's an untimed down to end that quarter. It would just go on to the next quarter and be clocked like normal. So to me, again, that's not that big of an issue. You're not changing the game. If there was a defensive penalty on the last play of the second or the fourth quarter, meaning the first half or the end of the game, then you would still play an untimed down to resolve that issue. So those are non-controversial considered, and for me, those are non-controversial as well. The third one is apparently considered gaining wide support among college football communities. It is clock continues to run after gaining a first down, with the exception of within 2 minutes of the half. I hate that. I'm not a fan of that. I know that's what the NFL does, but I'm not a fan of that. You get a first down, ball's dead, move the chain, spot the ball, then run the clock. I mean, that is football to me. I know, again, the NFL doesn't do that, but to me, that is football. It's how it's always been. I'm sure maybe I'm old man yelling at clouds here, but like, why are you trying to change that? Again, that's just how it's always been. I know not always. That's why you need to follow and continue to do the same things, but to me, that's the sport of football. And then number four, this is considered a very controversial one amongst members of the college football community. And the fourth proposal would be clock will continue to run after incomplete pass once the ball is spotted for play. I mean, what are we doing here? Yeah, I have a big issue with that. I have a huge issue with the last two, but especially this last one. Yeah, it's controversial for me as well. You want to run the clock after an incomplete pass? Are you kidding me? I mean, I understand when you get these pass-happy teams, the game can take a long time to go, but it just kind of is what it is, right? I mean, it's football. Oh, my God, I can't stand that. The report goes on to say that the first two proposals won't save that much time at all. The first two proposals being prohibited consecutive timeouts and no longer extending first or third quarters for an untimed down. These changes would be for this fall in 2023, but they're several weeks away from going final if they go final. It's not even been formally brought up yet for discussion this go around. It was last year, but it's not been formally brought up for discussion or vote or anything. So if this does go final, it won't be for a couple of weeks, but it would be for this upcoming football season. Here's a quote from the story. Many officials involved in the process expect at least a portion of the proposals to pass. Which of the four? A portion would be one or two, right? Probably at least one. You know, which one is it? If it's one of the last two, so help me God, right? This would bring the college football, the FBS level, similar to that of the NFL. However, the NFL still does not allow coaches to call back-to-back timeouts, and the NFL does not stop the clock after first downs gained. So trying to make it closely resembling that of the NFL. Let's see here. Running clock after the first downs could cut 7 to 9 minutes. Running clock after first downs could cut 7 to 9 plays per game, according to this report. Running the clock after an incomplete pass could eliminate more than twice that number. So you're trying to cut off some plays. I understand. You want to talk about safety protocols. Tennessee averaged, I don't know, I don't have it in front of me, but probably around 88 offensive plays a game or 86 offensive plays a game. There was more than that last year. So if you're cutting down maybe 10 plays per game, that is 10 less chances of someone getting injured. So I understand what they're saying, but again, it's all about money and dollar figures. So stop pretending that you're trying to look out for the safety of your players. It's just wild to me. Again, FBS game times on average in 2022, 3 hours and 22 minutes. That of the NFL was 3 hours and 10 minutes. So you're talking like a 12-minute difference here on average if you're trying to closely resemble that of the NFL. So those are the four soon-to-be proposed clock changes to try to shorten the game of football. But like I said in the mailbag edition of the show yesterday, until you take out the 2+ minutes of TV spots and the TV timeouts at the FBS level, nothing's truly going to cut the game down and shorten the time, right? I mean, again, if you go to a college football game, you don't see this when you're watching at home because, of course, you're in commercial break. But if you go to a college football game, they're just standing around. Sure, it's some more timeouts for coaches to talk to the team. But a lot of times they're just standing around. They're out there trying to kick the football off, and they're having to stand there and wait for the red hat to get off the field with this clock. It's bogus. Two of the proposals, if they pass, I wouldn't care. And again, that's prohibiting consecutive timeouts and no longer extending first and third quarters for untimed downs. I don't care about that. I think that's fine. I don't care one way or the other. I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference. The second two I have a huge problem with. Clock stops to run after the gain of a first down, except with 2 minutes and a half, and clock will continue to run after incomplete pass once the ball is spotted for play. I think that's ridiculous. Again, you're trying to change the sport of football, and it's annoying to me. So when these are formally proposed and introduced, will they pass? We will see, but if they are, they will take place for the 2023 season. What say you? What do you think about these proposed rule changes? Again, all this, a report from Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. When we come back, we'll check in with Josh Ward to get a little award Wednesday. But first, I want to remind you guys about a proud sponsor of our show, and that is FanDuel Sportsbook. The midway point of the NBA season is here. The NBA All-Star Game happened just a couple of days ago, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't hit. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from money line to point scores to three-pointers drained. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with same-game parlay. Don't miss any of the action right now, and go ahead and get your chance to win on no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That is FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, guys, it is that time of the week, Wednesday. So let's bring on Josh Ward for a little Ward Wednesday action. Josh is the co-host of Josh and Swain over at 99.1 The Sports Animal, noon to 3 weekdays. Again, Josh Ward. What's up, Josh?
Eric, good to see you as always.
Appreciate it, man. I know the pleasure is all mine. And we're recording this game. We're recording this segment prior to Tennessee tipping off against Texas A&M. Want to get that out in the open. So when we speak on Tennessee basketball, referring to the last game they played at Kentucky. But what an up and down week last week, man. You come in, you return home, still down two starters, and you beat the number one team in the country. And that came as a shock to probably very few people because we watch Tennessee basketball. And then you go on the road and you lose, and you're down by 20 at the halftime to Kentucky. Just really unfortunate. Tennessee falls one spot to number 11 in the AP poll. Kind of how would you summarize Tennessee basketball right now where it is? Again, this is before the Texas A&M game.
Yeah, the Alabama-Kentucky stretch was a great representation of what the last several weeks have been for Tennessee basketball and for Tennessee basketball fans to experience, but also what a lot of college basketball has been. This has been the season across the country for most teams, and for most teams it's been worse than what it's been for Tennessee. I think part of the issue, or a big part of the issue last week, was that Tennessee looked so good and so locked in and full of energy against Alabama. And then 3 days later, in the first half, looked as awful as it possibly could have. In the way that it was playing, the way that it was shooting, the mental approach, if that's the right way to describe it, as after the game, Rick Barnes said that not everybody was locked in. And it's impossible to understand how that could be, considering you're playing at Rupp Arena and Kentucky is a big name and they've already beaten you earlier in the season. If Tennessee's not locked in for a trip to Columbia, South Carolina, totally get it. I wouldn't be locked in as a viewer. But not being locked in for a game at Kentucky is difficult to understand. This is not a great offensive team. It just isn't. And it has the ability on any particular night to look really good, but across the board, it's not very good on offense. Tennessee's really good on defense, and that's how Tennessee is going to have to set itself up to go on a run. The other takeaway is, now I'm just going through a checklist, Eric, is I think Saturday was a reminder that, yeah, Tennessee really does need Josiah Jordan James and Julian Phillips to win one game. No, they're not a must. But to go on a run, Tennessee's not deep enough. They're not athletic enough. They're not good enough on the offensive end if they don't have those two guys.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, Julian Phillips and Josiah Jordan-James have been out for a minute now heading into the Texas A&M game. Of course, they were out. Julian went out the after halftime against Missouri. Josiah was out that game. We haven't seen either one of them since to the date. I understand Rick Barnes is, you know, getting a lot of hate and everything, and it's, you know, Final Four bust, or, you know, offense sucks, yada, 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 and all that type of stuff. And, you know, some criticism is warranted for sure. I mean, you're not going to sugarcoat anything, but I would say not having a team ready to play in Rupp, that's a little alarming to me, especially with all these veterans on this team. And again, as you pointed out, I mean, Triple J is not playing in this game. Maybe that has some reason to do it, but I mean, Vescovy, Uros, you've got Olivier. I mean, so many different, and Ziegler. I mean, so many different guys who have played in these types of games before, and it's almost like they weren't ready or mentally locked in going to Rupp Arena. That is a little alarming to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I should be clear. I'm not saying that Tennessee would have beaten Kentucky if the two guys out with injury would have played. Yeah. There's no way to know that. We have a previous game that you can point to and say, well, what about the game in Knoxville? So I'm not saying they would have, but when Ziegler goes out in foul trouble, and that's been a recurring issue here recently, teams are, I think, going at him, trying to get him to pick up fouls, because they know if he's on the bench, then Tennessee is limited in playmaking ability from a ball handling standpoint, especially if you don't have Josiah or Joey. And those are two guys, at least with the ball in their hands, that have the ability to make plays. If they're not available either, then you are really limited in an offense that is already limited to begin with at full strength. So that's part of the issue. But not being totally locked in, again, using that expression because those were the words of Rick Barnes, I can't explain it. He couldn't explain it afterward. He was asked, how do you get this team to be more consistent? And later in the press conference, he said, we will get it done. But he said, I don't have an answer right now. And that's not going to make fans feel better. So I mentioned a few minutes ago, most of the country, most of the teams around college basketball would trade places in a heartbeat with where Tennessee is as a projected 3 seed and one of the top 10 to 15 teams in the country. This is big time basketball problems that Tennessee is dealing with right now. But when a coach is making the amount of money that he is, and year in, year out, you have Tennessee in this position, the things that fans will complain about start to change. And now fans are in a position to be able to complain about some of the high-profile problems you deal with. What I would say that is a positive here is that shows that fans care. Like, you know, sometimes, yeah, I think even in my seat on the radio, I say, hey, you know, it's college basketball. This happens in December, January, February. Well, I can't keep saying that and then also say, but you also really need to care. You know, college basketball is a weird sport where you're playing a couple of games a week, and there is that football mindset that bleeds over, but they're different sports. If you want the fans to really be passionate, you can't also tell them, well, don't be passionate when things go bad. You know, only be passionate when things are good. So, yeah, it's a difficult time for Tennessee fans, but this season is going to be remembered for what this team does next. If Tennessee has a disappointing ending in March and is knocked out early, then the win against Alabama, the win against Kansas earlier in the season, that Saturday night against Texas, it's not going to mean that much. If Tennessee goes on a run, then those games will be brought up as, hey, remember when they won those big games in the season in which they went to the, let's say, Sweet 16 or beyond. So what happens next is ultimately going to determine what this team is remembered for.
You know, I was going to say this for last because I feel like I know how to program an interview, but a nice segue there, you know, in terms of this is not football season, all games are not weighed heavily, multiple games a week. Tennessee baseball season, you know, out in Arizona, not the best showing. You went 1-2, but, you know, the passion from the fan base, you'd think that the season was over. there's 65 games to play, you know. I mean, if ever there's a sport to where it's a marathon, not a sprint, if ever there's a sport to where not all games are weighed equally, we as sports fans, I feel like a lot of times, not just Tennessee fans, equate a basketball loss or a baseball loss to a loss in football, and it's 100 times different, you know. But what'd you think about Tennessee out in the desert, going out there 1-2 record, falling to Arizona, who's a good team, and then Grand Canyon, who I think is an underrated team, at Grand Canyon in front of 6,000 screaming, heckling fans when they had band and cheerleaders on the field for pregame?
So, Eric, you don't think I should put Tony Vitello in the hot seat yet?
Not
Give
yet,
Give a few more
Josh.
Weeks. Okay.
Yeah, not just
yeah.
yet.
Yeah. Well, I will still repeat that the fact that fans have an opinion on the opening weekend college baseball season is such a statement to what Tony Vitello and his coaches and the players, many of whom are gone now, what they've done here in the last few years to create anticipation for games where fans have to go find them to be able to watch them. And the fact that you can do that is great for college baseball, I think. Mm-hmm. But for this team, I think the weekend showed us that the pitching is going to be really strong. That's why Tennessee is a preseason top five team, number two in several polls to start things out. It's early in the season, so you're not going to ride those arms trying to win games in February. That is unnecessary. The lineup reminded that right now it's not as deep as what you've seen, where guys could go out with injury and you plug in other players and you have guys that can play depending on who you're going up against on the mound and be just fine, because like last year's team, you have Jordan Beck coming back and you have Drew Gilbert coming back and Luke Lipschitz, who had played so much. And by the way, was a reliable guy at first base in the field. That matters too. So a couple of guys out, the high profile piece being Maui Ahuna, which is a separate conversation. Missing those guys is very noticeable when they're not in the lineup right now, I think. And Tony Vitello and his coaches, they're going to figure out, okay, who really belongs in the lineup? What are we going to do at catcher? Who are we going to rely on a regular basis? Who needs to be more spot starting? They'll figure that out. They know that they have the arms. They have talent, I think, in the lineup, but they don't have those guys that have already proven we're going to carry the lineup, that teams are going to be afraid of us. They don't have that right now. That's what they have to get figured out as this early part of the season goes along.
Last thing, Josh, Tennessee football did pick up its fourth 2024 commit in in-state defensive back Marcus Gorey of Bradley Central. Tennessee already two cornerback commits and a couple other cornerback commits from the a couple other cornerback prospects for the state of Tennessee that Tennessee's in a good spot with. Loading up on that defensive side of the football so far, but Marcus Gorey of Bradley Central looks like he's going to be a ball.
Yeah, that does carry over from what we saw Tennessee do in the 23 class, carried over to 24 with the goal of stacking athletes and defensive backs and create better competition there, I think, in the next couple of years. And they'll always be active in looking for players at that position, I think, in the transfer portal. They added one from BYU, one after another could at the end of the spring. But getting more athletic in the secondary, more speed is a must for Tennessee if it's going to play at the highest level against teams that are going to be able to throw the football and have to against Tennessee. Think about that as well from a personnel standpoint. Tennessee needs to be able to go get the quarterback and defend the pass because of the way Tennessee plays on offense. Also, good start in-state as the Vols will look to continue to build this class in 2024 in the state of Tennessee. So I think there's positive momentum, and we'll see if Tennessee carries that over into March and April when recruiting will be busier.
Josh, what is coming up today and the rest of the week on the show?
Proper reaction. We try to have proper reaction no matter the results of these final regular season basketball games. It does really matter for SEC standing, by the way. Mm-hmm. So earlier I was mentioning where things are from a national polls and KenPom and seating standpoint. Work to be done in the SEC. So a lot of basketball, plenty of football, national news as well. There's a lot going on, including in Big Orange Country.
Josh Ward, co-host of Josh and Swain, every weekday, noon to 3 on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Josh, appreciate it, man.
You got it. Thanks, Eric.
All right. Every single Wednesday, we do Ward Wednesday right here on Locked On Vols. More of the show coming up next as you listen and watch on YouTube to Locked On Vols. All right, guys, welcome back into it. Your Wednesday edition of Locked On Vols, and I am your host, Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us here today. Thanks to Josh Ward for stopping by and talking with us a little bit. A reminder, because of the baseball game yesterday, I went ahead and recorded today's show before the basketball game last night. So we'll touch base on Tennessee and Texas A&M maybe later in the week. A question of the day, do you want to see pace of play changes in college football games? Are you strongly opinionated on the subject like I am, as we discussed in segment number one? Are you indifferent? What say you? Do you want to see some of these reported proposals to pass for the upcoming football season? If you're just joining us midway or towards the end of the show, you can go back to segment number one to hear what those reported proposals will be here in the next few weeks, according to Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. Okay, let's talk a little baseball, shall we? So Tennessee baseball, it is here. It started the baseball season 1-2 over the weekend. I didn't give a full recap of that on Tuesday because, again, Hardly ever until baseball season, when we get down to the nitty gritty, will we kind of, you know, dissect what's going on, you know, on a game by game basis. And really, that'll be very, very minuscule here on this podcast, because I love baseball. I enjoy covering it, but I know what drives the ship here in terms of numbers and ratings. But big picture stuff, you know, Tennessee fans, a lot of Tennessee fans jumped on the Tennessee baseball bandwagon maybe last year, maybe 2 years ago when they were in Omaha. But there's a lot of new Tennessee fans, and that's awesome. I think Tony Vitello has done such a great job of rebuilding this program. Those kids play hard. Those kids are fun to watch. They're energized and all that. And so I think that's a great, great thing. But what when it comes to that, you know, with more and more people, you know, joining the fandom of a new pro, or not, it's not a new program, but of a program, a lot of times they're just casual baseball fans, and, you know, they sometimes weigh a baseball loss as heavy as you would a basketball loss. And there's, you know, it's not the same. And some fans weigh a basketball loss as heavy as you would a football loss. In football, you get 12 games in the regular season. A loss will hurt you. It will cripple you, right? In basketball, a loss isn't the end of the world, right? In baseball, I mean, gosh, you play over 60-some-odd regular season games. One loss is not going to, you know, be a blimp in the radar, right? But Tennessee went out there and finished the weekend 1-2 in the MLB Desert Invitational, squared off against some good competition. I'll give you the cliff notes real quick. Arizona, bats-wise, neither team was ranked that Tennessee lost to, but Arizona, in terms of the offense, is a team that could probably carry them in the postseason play. They're a projected regional team, meaning Arizona is a projected NCAA tournament team this year. It's got really, really good players, really good bats, returning lineup. And, you know, Tennessee, you know, was awful with runners in scoring position and made some defensive miscues and lost that game on Friday. Grand Canyon is one of the best teams in the country in terms of accumulating wins that nobody knows about, because it's Grand Canyon that plays in the WAC. It's a really good baseball tradition. It's been really good each of the last six seasons. It's won that conference. The home environment when Tennessee played at Grand Canyon this past weekend was incredible. Guys, I don't know if you guys were following my coverage of VolQuest.com, or heard me say this maybe on a radio show or a similar podcast. In pregame for Tennessee and Grand Canyon, there was a band on the field. There were cheerleaders dancing on the field. There was a mascot. I mean, it was a whole production. And then there were 6,000 screaming fans the entire time heckling Tennessee. That type of environment, you know, that exact type of environment you won't ever see again. But that type of environment you won't see until Southeastern Conference play in a month from now. And really only at a couple of ballparks. Tennessee goes to LSU. You'll see it there. Tennessee goes to Arkansas this year. You'll see it there. So it was important for Tennessee to see that type of environment early on in the season, because, you know, when you come back for these non-conference games right now over the next month at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, for the most part, I'm not saying Tennessee will run the table or anything, but for the most part, the consistent competitiveness in those baseball games will not be there. And so it was important for Tennessee to see that. Tennessee, again, left a whole lot of men on base. They had three defensive miscues, three errors in that baseball game. And it's really unfortunate, because Chase Burns pitched well enough to win that baseball game. And I thought the relievers pitched well enough to win that baseball game as well. Fast forward to Sunday, Tennessee broke the bats open, four runs in the seventh. Blake Burke, a triple and a home run. Drew Breen pitched six innings of marvelous baseball, had a no-no going into the fourth. Into the fourth, I think he went 4 2/3 of a no-no. Anyway, he looked really, really good. So the big picture again, Tennessee baseball was preseason ranked number 2 in 5 of the 6 national plaudits that cover baseball at the college level. Quick sidebar, I think there's too many polls. I think it's completely stupid. I think it's ridiculous. And so for the sake of my coverage, I will, you know, if I list Tennessee as a ranked team, I will be going off the D1Baseball.com poll, because I think that is the most credible in covering the sport of baseball at the college level. So if I don't do the D1 baseball, it will be the USA Today coaches poll. But the USA Today coaches poll for baseball, college baseball, came out with a preseason ranking, and they're weird. They won't come out with another ranking until like a month or two, or like a month into the season, probably around SEC play, conference play. So they're done for a little while. They preseason ranked Tennessee number 2 in the country, and then they won't come out with another ranking for another couple of weeks. So I'm going to go through the polls, where Tennessee was ranked, and then where Tennessee is now after the 1-2 week. We'll start with D1 baseball. Tennessee was preseason ranked number 2, and after the 1-2 opening weekend showing at the MLB Desert Invitational, Tennessee dropped all the way to number 3. Tennessee comes in at number 3 in the D1 baseball week 2 poll, so didn't fall all that lot. Again, the two losses were not horrible losses because I think both of those teams will be regional bound. Again, the USA Today Coaches poll doesn't come out with one for a while. Baseball America poll. Tennessee was preseason ranked number 2. Tennessee slipped down to number 6 following the 1-2 weekend. The National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, the NCBWA, preseason ranked number 2 were the Vols. Now they are number 11 after the 1-2 weekend. Perfect Game, preseason ranked Tennessee number 2, slipped them down to number 5. And then Collegiate Baseball, preseason ranked number 5. It was the only national plaudit that had Tennessee not ranked number 2 in the preseason. So since they had Tennessee at number 5, they now have Tennessee down to number 11 after the 1-2 start. So if you're keeping track at home, of these 5 polls I'm discussing, D1 Baseball now has Tennessee at 3. Baseball America has Tennessee at 6. So and then a Perfect Game has Tennessee at 5. So you have 2 top 5 rankings remain, 3 top 10 rankings remain, and then the other 2 that are outside the top 10, the ball check in at number 11 in collegiate baseball and number 11 according to the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association or the NCBWA. All this to say there are way too many stupid polls in college baseball. I follow D1Baseball.com, but more so than anything, again, this is not the end of the world. It is opening weekend. Tennessee will lose some games this year. It is going to take some feeling out process, right? Tony Vitello told us over at VolQuest when I sat down for an exclusive interview before the season, he said, hey, we might be overranked right now. And that's a credit to where this program has done the last couple of years and to those guys who are no longer here when I asked him about new faces in the lineup. He said, everybody's gunning for us right now. You know, we went to Omaha a couple of years ago. We did what we did last year. So we might be overranked right now. And that's because, you know, it's because of what the program has done. But this is a new team. It's going to take these guys to kind of gel with one another and kind of figure out their identity and who they are. And that's okay. Over the next month, Tennessee will be playing non-conference games right here at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. A couple of midweeks this week, Dayton this weekend, a couple of midweeks next week, and then another weekend series and so on. And, you know, we're off and rolling. So a loss in baseball is not the end of the world. It's really, really not. Tennessee's losses over the weekend, it wasn't great. Tennessee didn't play well enough, especially offensively and defensively, to win those games, but they lost to some good teams, in my opinion. So I don't think it's the end of the world. I think Tennessee baseball will be okay, but they do need to find their identity and who they are, because this team will not be the team's, or will not be last year's team. You are starting 8 new position players. It's a, you know, there's some familiar faces and Jared Dickey and Blake Burke and Christian Moore. And of course, you got the pitching, which is superb. And they return all 3 All-American starters and some key guys in the bullpen. But offensively in that lineup card, new faces, new places. And so it's not the end of the world. Tennessee baseball is going to be just okay, but they do have to find their identity. All right, that is going to do it here for this Wednesday show. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and being with us here today. As always, please like this video, share it on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Let's help get this video in front of more and more Tennessee fans. And thanks so much for listening wherever you find your podcast, making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. Guys, I appreciate it as always. Give Locked On SEC your second listen. Chris Gordy does a fantastic job taking you around the SEC in 30 minutes or less every single day. That's Locked On SEC, your second listen, right behind Locked On Vols. Same time, same place. Let's do it again tomorrow. This is Locked On Vols.